Hello there, and welcome to AFPT Comics Podcast, episode 52. Forrest Hollingsworth is my co-host. Forrest, how many weeks in a year?
52 weeks in a year. Most years.
Most years, yes. Not every year, but most years, yes. So we've reached it. We've reached the pinnacle. 1 year of podcasts every week in 2019, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't think we missed any. I missed a few. You missed a few, but I think show didn't miss any.
The show itself, it's actually an entity. It's a living organism.
It's one of those immortal machines I've heard so much about.
Yes, yeah. It's like the term, it's Skynet. It's the next Terminator. My name is David Brooke, by the way. I didn't get to say that yet.
As folks know, my name is Forrest with two R's, but I was going to ask you, because I already have an idea about this.
Okay.
The next episode will be the new 52. It's our reboot.
Oh, it is.
It's our DC line reboot.
Yes.
We went back in time. We changed it all up.
Yep.
What would
my name might change? Your name might change. You're gonna be younger.
That's kind of where I was going. Yeah.
Because I mean, Batman became like 26, and he was supposed to be like 37 or something. Sorry.
What would be different in your podcasting backstory in the new 52?
Ah, interesting. I would have went to school for it, for starters. Mm.
Okay.
But then, while I was recording and taking a podcasting class, a toxic waste drum spills and it goes under the door and then it touches my feet, which then empowers me to have an even better voice, but only when I'm deeply, deeply scared. Yep. So every time we record, I have to scare myself every 5 minutes or I'll lose my podcasting abilities.
It's pretty good.
How about you?
I was struck by lightning while holding my microphone.
My God, we both are suffering calamities.
And I get glimpses forward into the future, 5 seconds to know what you're going to say, and we'll never interrupt each other ever again. But thanks to the listeners for leaning with us and rocking with us for 52 episodes. That's awesome. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. You know, I've been writing for AIPTComics.com for 8 years, and I was kind of averse to doing a podcast.
Mm.
I know some people are like, ugh, someone has a podcast. Like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But going to conventions and stuff, I was surprised that people had like a deep respect for it when I told them what I do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, and you know, I respect everyone who's listening too, because we wouldn't do it if we weren't getting the listens.
Yeah. We do it for you.
We do.
You made us this way. I've only been writing for AIPT for a year, a little over a year now. I've been writing comic book reviews in some form since about 2012.
Mm-hmm.
I've mostly shifted my focus to the podcast at this point because I really like the feedback we're getting from people and I really like talking with you every week and stuff. So I appreciate that we're able to do this.
One cool thing about the podcast that I didn't foresee is that, you know, we can't write an article on every bit of news, but this show allows us to kind of cover anything we missed in the week. If you do read our comic reviews and comic news on the site, this is a good way to do a cleanup, get it all out there.
Yep. And also, you know, some sites, and I'm not trying to be negative about comic books, journalism or whatever in the whole, some sites get exclusives.
Yeah.
You know, they get news that we don't get. The big publishers are trying to get their word out as far as widespread as possible. And we don't normally have the time or the space to cover that in the week when they want to release it, like the day a new book is announced or whatever.
We all have full-time jobs. So.
But it is, we all have full-time jobs, right? It is nice to be able to cover it with you guys and for you guys at the end of the week.
Yeah, you know, one cool thing that I noticed this week, Marvel Comics only has 4 books out, I think, next week. And AIPT got one of the exclusives of the 4, so... It's a nice, it gave me the warm and fuzzies that we were chosen as one of the 4 sites that would run an exclusive preview.
And also, make a count for my friend Dave and go to aiptcomics.com and check that out.
We need the clicks. Out. This is this is our last show before 2019, or at the end of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And to kick off our last show, or not to kick off our last show, to end our last show, we're going to have Carmen Maria Machado and Danny on to talk about the Lolo Woods, the Hill House comic that came out a couple days ago. So hang in there for that interview. It's actually quite a cool interview. They both have very unique perspectives since this is Carmen's first comic, and Danny is... you know, done some amazing work of the last couple of years with like Coffin Bound and stuff like that. So we get into some interesting topics that you don't normally hear from the number of guests we've had this past year.
And also, I mean, personally, I'm just so jazzed on the whole Hill House line right now.
Yes.
I'm getting all that content however I can. And having it on our own show is great.
Yeah, yeah. And this is our, what is it, third Hill House Comics interview? So, and we've gotten to interview every creator so far. So hopefully this continues in the new year. We'll get a grab bag of every Hill House comic in an interview format. But before we do that, we talk about the news on this show. We talk about the biggest news of the week. There's a kind of a couple big pieces of news that don't normally come out at this time of year because this time of year, all the publishers are winding down. One thing I was really surprised by is the Free Comic Book Day 2020 titles got released and kind of teased.
The gold level comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you, was there anything that popped out at you? I know everyone's talking about, ooh, there's going to be a Free Comic Book Day X-Men book.
Yeah. I was going to say real quick, and I don't know these folks and I don't know anything about it. And I hate that I'm always the negative person on the podcast, but
that's not true.
There's a book from 10 Speed Press called Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics.
Yes.
And I really hope that that's not as exploitative as it looks and sounds.
Right, right, right.
Because Jack Kirby had a very negative view of the comic book industry by the time he was done.
Mm-hmm.
For very justifiable reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And to kind of see this weird, like, whitewashing of it. I don't know. Whitewashing isn't the right word. Revisionism. Makes me uncomfortable. But I have not read it yet, so I can't say definitively whether or not that's the case.
The creator, Tom Scioli, he has a style that's very Kirby-esque, so I see why he's doing it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's done a lot of like Transformer books for IDW.
He also did Fantastic Four Grand Design.
Yes,
yeah.
Which is not yet done, right?
There's another half to come. Yep.
Yep. I always liked Free Comic Book Day, although I have to say the last couple of years, there's only been like one or two titles that I've liked, and they're usually Marvel titles. Just because they're pretty good at making these books matter.
Yeah, I think they kind of set up a new paradigm almost always in these books. At the very least, if the issue isn't interesting, there's like a final page that's like a preview for something that's coming. I think that was originally how they announced Jason Aaron's Avengers team.
Yes, that's right. And then I think they also hyped Absolute Carnage.
Absolute Carnage had the backup story. There was also that really great issue where Pete and Miles were eating pizza.
Yes, by Saladin Ahmed. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. That was really good.
Mm-hmm. And then in a previous year, they also announced Ta-Nehisi Coates was writing Captain America.
Right.
With that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wonder what the X-Men one will do. It'll probably give us a hint at some sort of event coming up. Maybe Moira will show up?
Yeah. They're all in on it. So, and I really doubt they're going to make some sort of dumb, like, here's all the X-Men hanging out on Krakoa on the beach or whatever comic, you know?
Yeah.
It's not going to be like a weird, funny one-shot or anything. It's going to be very serious and well-structured and some attempt at reunifying all those stories so they can do something with it.
Robert Kirkman and Chris Samnee's Firepower number one's getting a preview as well. And then Valiant is having a 30th anniversary, which is kind of cool.
Hmm. Yeah, great. Good for them. We don't talk about Valiant often, but they have some books that I like quite a bit. X-O Manowar is great.
Mm, yeah, yeah. Matt Kent's reboot of it was a fantastic couple years back.
Matt Kent's reboot of Divinity was also great.
That guy, Matt Kent, he's pretty good. In our next bit of news, Wonder Woman number 750 is launching. It's an anniversary issue, so we're going to get an anniversary-sized mount of variant covers. 20, in fact.
20 covers, $9.99 a piece.
Are you going to buy all 20?
You know,
do you have a kind of dough?
I have a little bit of a story about that. Yeah. I thought about buying all of the covers of the first Absolute Carnage.
Yeah, I remember you talking about on this show.
And I was really, really excited about that book. But then the cover was like $7.99, I think. Because it was oversized, which is fine. And my LCS, I messaged him on Facebook, and I was like, hey, dude, like, you know, I'm in the quasi in the biz, leeching off of the biz, whatever. So I know all these Absolute Carnage covers are coming out. Can you hold one for each one of them? Each one of them for me.
Yeah.
And he messaged me back and was like, dude, that's going to be like $90. Are you sure?
That's crazy.
And I backed out. I said, pick the main cover and the one you like the most. And there is someone out there who bought every Absolute Carnage cover.
Oh, I'm sure.
There's someone out there who's going to buy every Wonder Woman cover. But at even more dollars, even more of my hard-earned dollars, it's not going to be me.
How many people do you think go out there, buy all 21 woman covers, and go on eBay, sell it for what, $300?
Yeah, they sell the whole set for usually like 10% markup of the general price. Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen it happen. People try to flip still every Black Label book. Since the Batwang, it'll happen.
It changed lives.
I just caught what you said.
The Batwang did change lives.
It probably changed someone's life. The first person probably, to sell that shit on eBay.
It probably got people fired too. That changed lives true. That way as well.
Yeah, I don't like that you brought up the sad part of it.
Yeah, well.
How do you feel about this in general? I like a celebration of Wonder Woman.
I feel like the 96 page issue is enough. I don't that's need cool. covers.
It's neat. Yeah,
and there's a lot of great creators involved.
Right, that's kind of my hang up. Is like so many creators have contributed to Wonder Woman up to 750, and so many will in the future. Mm-hmm. They did so much stuff for Batman's 80th, and why shouldn't Wonder Woman as part of the Trinity also get that? Right. It makes perfect sense to me, but it's like when you see 20 covers, $9.99, it's hard not to feel like a little exploited.
You know, I don't remember. Did Action Comics 1000 and Detective Comics 1000 have 20 covers? I don't think they did.
I don't think so. I think they have like 10, maybe a dozen.
They were definitely $10 comics, but I don't know about the variant covers.
And they sold well. They sold well units and price-wise when we covered them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And this will, too. Right.
Mm-hmm. And with the movie coming out, too, that's probably one of the bigger reasons why they're even doing this so big, because they know everyone's going to be like, oh, maybe this will be worth more because the movie's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever.
Yeah. I am very excited for Wonder Woman to hit this milestone. And some folks with money into DC are, too.
Oh, yeah. For sure. In our next bit of news, Spider-Woman is getting a new costume. And surprisingly, so Marvel released the cover to Spider-Woman by Carla Pacheco and Perry Perez, and she had the old costume. And then like 2 weeks later...
The original costume, the red with the armpit webs and the yellow streak. Yeah.
Yep. And then they released the exact same cover 2 weeks later, but with the new costume.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a bit of a shock to me. It's designed by Dave Johnson. It has a black, mostly black bodice, and then like very much regular Spider-Man webbing on the shoulders and arms, which is kind of interesting. Do you like this costume, Forrest?
Mm-hmm.
If you go to AIPTComics.com, you can actually take a look at it. We have it, an article for it.
I do not.
You do not?
I do not like it. They try to keep the like... Spider-Woman yellow in it. There's like all these weird little yellow triangles on it, like the backs of her thighs, her hands, her forehead. It's weird. It feels like a weird embellishment. It may have been better to just make the shoulder part yellow.
Right.
And I like the Chris Anka costume so much, which is which isn't to say that Dave Johnson did a bad job or anything. Mm-hmm. Just that I would have preferred Anka's costume it'd be in the book.
Anka's is a little more it's a little less sexploitive, I would say.
Absolutely.
Like, she's got pants, boots,
right, absolutely.
And actually this other one is like a leotard.
No kidding.
Yeah.
He posted some other sketches of the costume.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one where she had like a pea coat on, like a long red coat. It was really cool. And Dennis Hopeless had said that he really wanted to write a story where they ended up using that. And I was just kind of like, I don't see why you couldn't still do it.
I would say, you know, it's a little less about her boobs now.
It's definitely better than the OG costume.
Right. It's a little, because like the full black from the chest down makes it a little more, or a little less about her body, I would say. Mm-hmm. But the shoulders are so much like Spider-Man's costume that it feels like it's cribbing off of the original Spider-Man costume rather than doing its own thing.
Yeah.
It's like a melding of Spider-Man and Anka's design, I'd say.
I think you just touched on what my problem with it is.
What's that?
They tried to meet everyone in the middle.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see how long it lasts. We've seen comic creators change quickly. Remember the Mark Bagley Scarlet Spider costume where you see a smile?
Yeah.
And that was just in the solicits. People lost their minds and Marvel got rid of it before it even came out.
Yeah. I'm excited for this book.
Yeah.
Carla's been tweeting about it on Twitter a lot. Where else do you tweet? Sorry. And saying like, this book's all about like action and craziness, and Jessica's on like this really cool mission, helicopters and explosions and all this stuff. But then like took a second the other day to say, hey, I really hear people that have liked the new direction for Jessica Drew. And I assure you that that is also part of the DNA of this book. She's still a mother. She's still a friend. She's still struggling with being a hero. Mm-hmm. But also there's a lot of explosions. And I was like, you know, that's kind of the pace I want for a superhero comic.
For sure.
On paper, yeah.
Character in action. Give it to us. Yeah, I think she'll nail it. I think she'll nail it. We'll see in March. Next up, Marvel's March 2020 solicitations have come out.
Mm-hmm.
And while there weren't a lot of big surprises because they already leaked. I keep saying leaked, but they already released most of the big news from these solicitations. Probably the biggest, I would say, is Scotty Young and Humberto Ramos's new series, Strange Academy, number one.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like the biggest, what are they doing with this new title?
I mean, Young Cable is up there for me.
Yeah, and then we already knew about Hellions. That was also in these March solicitations.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, like a lot of stuff is already known. There was some new information concerning the X-Men books, the Dawn of X books. Including Wolverine, which will have its second issue in March. And then there was some information about Star Wars. There's also The Road to Empire, which Empire is their new event that's going to be out in April. And hence why there's a Road to Empire book out in March. But again, there's not a lot of information in there, although it does seem like Empire is going to be a cosmic event, considering they have all these...
Yeah, and it's starting with Incoming next week, which is a cosmic event.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I just noticed actually is I think that they quietly confirmed that The Amazing Mary Jane is an ongoing.
Yes, issue 6 is solicited.
Issue 6 is solicited. And it does not have the of 7 or anything after it.
Right.
That was originally a miniseries.
Must so be selling cool. well.
It must be doing
we
well.
We know it is. We know it is. We talked about that a couple days ago.
Yeah.
Or a couple weeks ago.
My other big takeaway was there's a lot of horror.
Yeah,
comics in this. Morbius is an ongoing. Ravencroft, Scream, Curse of Carnage, Venom is still going. There's a lot of genre comic solicited here, and I'm into that. I like that.
Yeah. Oh, and they have the whole what is that thing? The Ravencroft as well is continuing.
Yes, but that is a limited series. I think that's only 5 issues.
Right, with a couple tie-ins, I think.
Mm-hmm. There's one cover here, Conan and the Battle for the Serpent Crown, written by Saladin Ahmed, with cover art by Mahmoud Asrar, and it is Conan standing on top of like a casino with black cat crouching behind him.
Yeah.
And if you had shown me this a year ago at this time, I would have said, that's cool fan art. Like, you're a damn liar. That's neat, though.
It's pretty wild, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a weird, weird year. And Bounty Hunters looks awesome. Star Wars Bounty Hunters.
Yes.
Written by Ethan Sachs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who
he's done a great job.
Those characters in particular, he's done a great job.
Yeah, he did the Galaxy's Edge tie-in book there, and it was pretty solid.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, even Old Man Quill felt very Bounty Hunter-esque to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's cool.
And then the Rise of Kylo Ren is continuing, the fourth issue. I don't know if you read, did you read the first issue yet?
I did.
It's a wild issue, isn't it?
Some weird stuff going on.
Kind of changes things from the last two movies.
Kind of got some stuff going on that they are going to have to clean up yet again.
I like how the comics can be used now to like fix mistakes.
Fix things, yeah.
Next up in our news, Transformers vs. Terminator is coming in 2020. Transformers Verse Terminator.
This is another thing where I would be like, wait, what?
Dark Horse and IDW are teaming up to do this crossover event. It's only 4 issues. That's what I'm most excited about. They're not drawing this out into like a 24 issue event. it's kind of a cool combo. It kind of makes sense, I guess. Because Transformers try to save humans, right?
Well, so, and also, like, you know, what if the Transformers... I have no idea what the pitch is. This is my pitch.
Yeah.
What if the Transformers try to come back to Earth and it's, like, taken over by Terminators?
Okay. You know? They have to use time travel to go back and save John Connor.
And it's,
it's literally
the Terminator 2, except Optimus Prime.
Yes. Yes, and he's, like, in a mall, but he's, you know, 14 feet tall. He's so he's
cutting through the whole thing.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I actually think this is pretty neat.
And... dude, Optimus Prime on a motorcycle? Just think about that. It would be sick.
I bet... what's that guy's name? Michael Bay has thought of that before.
Oh, probably.
Oh, my God.
Don't let Michael Bay see this comic. Sorry. What'd you say?
What'd you say?
I said, don't let Michael Bay see this comic. We're in trouble.
I was thinking about Optimus Prime using motorcycles as roller skates.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah.
That'd be neat.
That's like a Rick and Morty skit right there.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of cool directions they could go with this book now that we're talking about it.
It's pretty fun. It's ridiculous, and that's why it'll probably be cool.
Also, been quietly the year of Terminator with Dark Fate coming out. It was pretty well received. I don't think it did well in the box office.
No,
but
didn't crush it.
Like they announced Terminator for I think 6 or 7 video games. There was DLC. A Terminator game came out. It's also in like Gears of War 5. Bunch of other stuff. So very quietly, like the year of Terminator, or that property's doing better than it has in a really long time.
Yeah, it's been a drought. It's been a drought. In our next bit of news, Jonathan Hickman and Mike Hiddleston are doing a book called Decorum Number 1. It's out in March from Image Comics. I don't know if you got a chance to look at this. It looks really cool. It's a 56-page first issue, $5, series premiere. It's got a sci-fi feel. I'm so surprised Hickman's doing sci-fi. I didn't see it coming from him. but there's like these natives on this island that see this ship. It looks like a classic example of conquistadors showing up and killing all the natives. And then all of a sudden he's got all these like robot arms coming out of him and he's a robot himself. Then there's like a spaceship in the sky. I don't know. It looks freaking insane.
Yeah,
it looks really
pretty. Really awesome. The art is amazing.
It makes me wonder, how does Hickman have all of this creative juice? How does he have all the time to do something this wild and original looking while also doing Dawn of X?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we've kind of gotten to the point in Dawn of X now where this ship isn't only being steered by him.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of collaborators he trusts. That's why he got the editorial oversight to pick the teams, some better than others. But definitely, I think he's not doing the heavy lifting on X-Men anymore.
Right. Right.
Although I did notice he's solicited as the only author for one of the New Mutants books coming out in March 2020, which is interesting because originally it was supposed to, after I think the 5th issue, be written only by Ed Brisson.
Yeah, and judging by the last 2 issues of that book, it looks like they're just going to trade off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they may have quietly changed the model.
It's like it's kind of a weird model, isn't it? Because you keep the series going, but you're both telling completely different stories.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird in a sense.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, can we get back to the other? Like, if you prefer one story to the other, it's kind of frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's like kind of like the Sea of Stars model, Jason Aaron and Dennis Hopeless. And I like that, but you definitely have to make some cohesion work. And I don't know that it's working as well in New Mutants as I would like.
Yeah, there's, I would say, absolutely no cohesion so far.
Yeah. One thing about Decorum, the book that we were talking about, there's a dude on the cover of this book that just looks like New Apocalypse.
Does he?
Yeah, on the two-page, or like the front and back cover with like the lasers and the dark crystals on it.
Oh, I
see
him.
There's a man in the middle that is just Apocalypse.
And he has like an X suit.
Yep.
That's funny. Yeah, can't get away from it. Hickman must be inspired by X-Men in all realms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe it's the story he wanted to tell with Apocalypse, just kind of spun it off to something else.
With Hox and Pox, it definitely feels like he could have done this story at Image without the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the concept of it?
Yeah.
Of course, it works better when you hang an entire continuity character.
Yeah.
Much easier to just jump on board. Actually, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? If you had the greatest sci-fi idea... but you didn't want to have to introduce all these characters. Why don't you just make it a Spider-Man story?
I would say some writers have done that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
In our last bit of news, Batman, Tom King's Batman is ending, and Doomsday Clock finally came out.
It only took two issues.
Issue 12, Jeff Johns and Gary Frank, they did it. They pulled it off. But did they pull it off?
I kind of didn't think they were going to.
Yeah, it was touch and go there for a little while. I think we were all a little suspect of it.
A little while might be an exaggeration. I think it was touch and go for like 3 years.
Yeah, because issues would be like, oh, this is delayed. Oh, this is delayed. I would highly recommend checking out Watching the Watchmen, a critical conversation on Three Canons, an article at aiptcomics.com by Ritesh Babu and Vishal. They did a great job talking about Doomsday Clock, the Watchmen television show, and Peter Cannon, the book that came out from Dynamite Entertainment last year. They basically look at all three of these stories and how they're influenced by and how they kind of carry forward ideas from the original Watchmen, which is one of the biggest reasons why people read Doomsday Clock, right? We were expecting it to be like this traditional sequel.
Yeah. I mean, we were expecting it to go here in the same way we were just talking about New Mutants.
Right. I reviewed this book. I gave it a good score, but it's a weird ending. I need to read the whole thing in one sitting.
I think a lot of people are... It has definitely suffered from the delays in that if you want to deliver a story that harkens all the way back to issue one, you have to expect that people are going to sit down and read all of it.
Yeah.
We're not publishers. We're not shipping books and putting them out or whatever. But I think at some point here, I would have just released it as a trade.
Like once you got to issue six, maybe be like, let's just get all the rest and make one.
Put the other six out.
Graphic novel. Yeah. When I was over I did a European tour for vacation in June. I went to a comic store and I found a Doomsday Clock, but it was the first three issues combined. And I realized a lot of the other publishers did the same thing. I think what they do is before they don't just translate every issue. They wait for a couple issues to come out, translate all three. I think it's probably easier for a translator to do three issues and one. But it was like a mini trade of the first three issues of Doomsday Clock. And I'm like, wow, this is actually a pretty cool way to read it. This is not on any of our top books of last week. So that might be telling.
It's hard for me to tell what begat what, but something definitely happened in the process of this book coming out. I'm not sure if Doomsday Clock was delayed to change the script so that it references or leads into 5G, the new DC reboot, or if it's the inverse where it's like, oh, nothing else for 5G is ready, so we can't put out Doomsday Clock.
Oh, I see.
I don't know. But there's something there.
The ending felt... Jeff Johns basically makes this statement that reboots always happen and they will continue to always happen. And he references 5G directly, but in the same sense, at the end of this 12th issue, he basically makes the argument that it's always going to change. It's always going to reboot. So just deal with it and like enjoy these reboots for what they are. Because people get upset, right?
Absolutely.
So, like, it's so weird because, honestly, I think the narrative had to have changed or his goals in this series because it started out as, like, this great homage to the original Watchmen and, like, playing with those themes. And then it slowly, like, devolved into, actually, no, this is more about the DC characters understanding the Watchmen, who the Watchmen characters are, not the other way around. Like, it didn't matter as much. Although the ending is very much about Dr. Manhattan being inspired by Superman. Which some people hate and some people like.
Yeah.
I have not seen
a positive reception to this book and to this, I guess, event, maxi-series. I don't even know what to call it. This is just, like, straight-up conjecture, but it's really hard for me not to think that they fucking named it 5G because they're owned by AT&T.
Oh, yes.
Like, that's it's true. So bold and plain-faced and weird.
That's fun. I never thought of that connection. Yeah. So get on the new 5G cell phone plan and get on the new DC event. Look at that. It's free marketing.
Yeah. comes preloaded with DC Universe.
Man. Well, in our next segment, Top Books of Last Week, we talk about our two favorite books out last week.
That we did like.
that we did like. We didn't. Oh, I did like Doomsday Clock, but I didn't like
I have not read it, admittedly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you will.
I will. I actually, to my point, I was waiting for the trade at this point. Just because there's no way I can contain all that information.
No, it's a lot. It's a lot to ask. To start this segment, we always talk about comicbookroundup.com's top fan and critic pick. Top critic pick was King Thor number 4, no surprise, with a 9.8. And the top fan pick was Basketful of Heads number 3 with a 9.5.
Not terribly surprised by that either. As a reminder to folks, there are higher rated books over at comicbookroundup.com, but we pick books that have at over 3 reviews. So we pick books that have 4 reviews or higher.
Right.
And so you'll go over there and see one person that really loved, I don't know,
Giraffe what, Adventures,
Batman Superman one. Or something, and it will be a 10 out of 10, but it's only got 2 reviews. And that's just not weighted enough for us, so we pick these. That was especially apparent this week, because I think that there were 4 books ahead of Basketful of Heads.
Ah, okay. Gotcha. What is your second favorite book of last week?
My second favorite book of last week is Skull Digger and Skeleton Boy number 1, written by Jeff Lemire with art by Tansy Zonjic. This takes place in the Black Hammer universe. I've read the mainline Black Hammer series, but I haven't read a lot of the spin-offs. This is kind of the first spin-off I thought I would buy into. It's actually just because I like the cover art so much. But this is a really neat, kind of sparse story. Lemire really lets Zonjic tell the story with the art quite a bit. It's about loss and parenthood and vigilante justice. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a quasi-Batman Punisher story, but the way that it's told, the plot beats are actually a bit more like noir. There's a detective that's kind of looking into this superhero, big quotes around superhero. That they have a past and a history and everybody else seems to know, and also there's a criminal breaking out of jail at the same time, and the way that noir stories set up a ton of dominoes to actually fall and be interconnected, this book did really, really well, and it had me buy into not just a cool character, but the entire universe or the entire arc, which is, it's always great. Sometimes for one sure. issue, a premiere issue is just like, this character doing really cool things, you know, and it's kind of hard to buy into, but this was way more complex, way more nuanced. And Zondrick's art is amazing. Beautiful, cool stuff with there's especially one page where there are, I think, 4 vertical panels. And the first one is off the page. And then it's slowly cropping in on a woman's face and the panels themselves are getting smaller. It was really, really well done, really artfully crafted. I could tell that they were very much on the same page in terms of cohesion between the narrative and the art.
Yeah, the layout design was very cool.
What was your second pick?
The Lolo Woods number 1 by Carmen Maria Machado and Danny with colors by Tamron Bonvillain. They're on the show later to talk about this, but I actually say in the interview, this is my favorite Hill House comic so far. And they were like, oh, thank you. And I was like, oh, God, I'm sucking up to them. But it's a really good debut. I think why I liked it so much, I gave it a 10 out of 10 in my comic book review on AIPTComics.com. It's a great blending of visual horror and prose-style horror. There is a line in the issue that is so haunting and so well-written. Carmen wrote in these captions, babies were born with placentas black as soot. Their mothers were birthing coal itself. And I just thought that was so good. And it kind of embodies the mood and atmospheric nature of the comic. Mm-hmm. There's a horror, but it's still in the shadows. We don't quite see it yet. And they live in this town where the ground is literally warm because there's a fire burning underneath because it's a coal mining town. And these fires have lit. But basically, they're standing on top of hell itself.
Yeah, people, you know, that's sick. A real thing,
right? Yeah,
Centralia, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. Yeah,
yep. It's based on true events too, so there's that meaning there where the best horror is based on something that could actually happen and is something that's feasible to the mind. I highly recommend checking it out, and I highly recommend checking out our interview later in the show. What is your number one pick of last week?
My number one pick of last week is
throw it down
Wonder Woman: Dead Earth number 1. Writing and art by Daniel Warren Johnson with colors by Mike Spicer. This book kicks ass. This is one of those prestige Black Label books in the same vein as, like, it's actually very similar to Last Night on Earth. I liked this a lot more, though, because, I mean, by comparison, Last Night on Earth felt to me like just this Elseworlds Batman tale. I get that Capullo and Snyder said it was going to be the cap on their Batman, but the character felt so removed from Batman to me, almost as removed as the settings were. This doesn't feel like that at all. Like, Daniel Warren Johnson really gets what Wonder Woman is about, really gets Wonder Woman's specific style of heroism mixed with sincerity, compassion, and also just, like, extreme competence and violence. The kind of warrior poet archetype, right?
Yeah.
But what
yeah.
if you put that into Mad Max?
Mm-hmm.
And it looks awesome. I have been a fan of Daniel Warren Johnson's art since he worked on a really underappreciated book called Ghost Fleet with Donnie Cates.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a big fan of his work. This is everything that I like about what I liked about Extremity, his previous book, Space Mullet, another book he did. It's so detailed and complex. Very few artists, I think, are spending as much time on a single page as he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted to see that given to a superhero that we know and appreciate. And this book is just that. It's just awesome. It's just plainly awesome.
Can we put this quote in the book? It snaps, Forrest Hollingsworth?
It slaps.
Slaps, sorry.
It slaps. Put a small picture of me, like a quarter-sized picture of me doing the thumbs up. It slaps.
Johnson's ability to draw a monster that's like grotesque but also cool, it's yeah. solidly done.
Yeah, yeah. That's some Witcher level monster design.
Oh, true, true.
Yeah.
My favorite book of last week was Joker Killer Smile number 2 by Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino. This is a 3-issue DC Black Label series. And this second issue dives deep into the main character's head, this therapist that's been interviewing Joker. And it opens with him going to the Arkham Diner, this really scary green looking diner where all of the rogues of Batman are there working. And after a little bit, you realize it's a nightmare. And once again, Sorrentino is blowing us away with these crazy layout designs, these crazy, crazy way to like convey story that you don't conventionally see in comic books. It's not just like your usual gutters and panels, but he's mixing it up quite a bit. There's a page where you see the main character's head, but it's been broken apart into cubes. And then on top is a brain, and he's being eaten by these characters. It's like grotesque and weird yeah. and strange. Anyway, the issue is paced perfectly where you go deeper and deeper and you don't really know what's going on. The main character doesn't either. He's confused and erratic with his family and his boss. Eventually we learn what's going on and so does he, and it gets real dark and really scary, and I don't know where they're going next, but I can't wait to see where it goes, because the way they're writing Joker and drawing Joker, he's like a normal dude. He doesn't look like scary. He's not laughing constantly. He actually seems concerned for the main character at certain points and yet he's the villain, you know.
Yeah,
there's definitely some kind of weird secret, you know, psychology
thing going on. Yeah,
he's
yeah.
controlling. I don't know what's going on, but I'm all in on where this goes from here. I also wrote a review for aptcomics.com and I gave it a 10 out of 10. It's really just one of the best single issues I've read in quite a while. So go check that out.
And to piggyback off of that real quick, if you had told me at the beginning of 2019 that both of our yeah. number one picks were going to be Black Label books,
mm-hmm.
I would not have believed you. In the same vein as Conan, like, what a turnaround.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I did not see that coming. But I mean, it makes sense, right? They're playing to the strengths of these creators, and they're
yeah.
them kind of.
And I think actually maybe that age bracket model is going to work out for them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
In our next segment, 2020 predictions, we're going to give you one positive thing and one negative thing that we think is going to happen in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to give us one of yours?
Sure. My positive thing is I think Neil Gaiman is going to make a full-scale return to comics.
Really?
I think certainly Neil Gaiman has been comics adjacent for mm-hmm. like the whole past 2 years, five years. Like, there's been adaptations of American Gods, an American Gods sequel. There's a Norse mythology book that's coming out in the coming year. He's done kind of like graphic novel-y type stuff, but I think he's either going to announce a new series or an Alan Moore-esque reboot of a series.
Really?
Interesting. His proclivity towards comics seems to be increasing, like, across all of his social media. He's posting about it often. DC is very easily getting deals with him right now. Makes me think that his interest has returned to comics in a way that I'm pretty excited about. I think it's going to be great for comics. And in a way that, like, very few other writers can be for comics. And I think it's also just great, a great financial move.
All right, can I give you one reason why I think you're right and one reason why I think you're wrong?
Yeah.
All right, one reason why I think you're right. Miracle Man. Marvel's been hyping that that's coming back for ages. He did that one pager for the Marvel 1000. It would be a great time for him to bring this character back because we know Marvel finally owns it and has owned it for a couple years but have done nothing with it.
Yeah, yeah.
One reason why you're wrong. He is publicly mentioned that he's writing the Sandman series for Netflix. So
yeah.
He could be completely all out, not only writing, really, but also producing the show.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but I kind of think that's kind of where I was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's closer to and working on his properties, comics-related, more than ever.
My positive, I think it's a positive, I think that one major DC writer is going to jump ship to Marvel this year. Just seeing how Bendis has shaken things up, seeing how he's taking on the whole Legion of Superheroes thing and Superman. Now that Tom King's leaving, there's all this unrest. And I imagine someone's not going to get a book they want, or someone's going to be hurt that they didn't get it. And I imagine one of these big time, I say big time, but one of the more headliner writers is going to move over to Marvel and maybe start writing something like Thor, maybe. No, Donny Case is taking over Thor. I think that's a positive thing, because I like it when a lifer, DC guy or Marvel guy moves over.
Yep, absolutely. Do you have a guess as to who?
If I were to wager, I would say Scott Snyder might leave.
Wow.
Okay, well, think about it. He just finished Batman. Justice League is winding down. What does he have next? Nothing in the canon yet. Meanwhile, Tom King, even though he's leaving Batman, he still has the Mitch Gerads series coming.
Strange Adventures. I think you're right. Yeah.
James Tynion's writing Batman right now.
I think Snyder's gonna delve into creator owned for a bit.
That's true.
I do think he'd probably get Big Two burnout.
Yeah.
I would say Brian Azzarello.
Couldn't move over?
Yep.
Okay.
DC, probably still not happy about Batman Damned.
Right.
And Marvel is leaning harder and harder into the genre comics that Brian Azzarello writes.
That's true.
So, a carnage continuing, ongoing, written by Brian Azzarello.
You heard it here first, folks.
I wouldn't be surprised.
What is your negative?
My negative prediction is actually implicitly and explicitly tied to my positive. I think that we are going to see more celebrity, their names slapped onto a line books. In the
like
same
Joe
vein
Hill?
As Hill House.
Yeah.
But Joe Hill, we know from interviews and from conversations with editors and writers and stuff, is actually very involved in the process.
Yes.
I don't think that the coming celebrities are going to be as involved. I think it's going to be a vanity press with their name on it.
Like John Carpenter's so-and-so?
Yeah, sure. I like Carpenter a lot, but yeah.
Which publisher is going to be pulling this off?
DC.
DC, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
DC is going to do this, and they're going to do it with, let me spin
Michael
the
Bay.
Wheel.
Michael Bay.
I thought you
Michael
said
Bay.
Nickelback.
Nickelback and Michael Bay.
Actually, would not be terribly surprised by a Michael Bay line or James Cameron or something.
Yeah, yeah. Although James Cameron's so busy with Avatar, and it's going to make more money than all the Avengers movies, as he said.
Right. And that's the thing. Anyone that they get, J.J. Abrams on Spider-Man, doesn't actually have the time to do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem with it. Their name is attached to it to sell books, but the quality is inconsistent. They can take a loss.
Yeah.
In devoting time to it, because they're going to make that up with the name attached to it.
Ooh, David Lynch is going to do a line of comics for Dark Horse Comics.
There is no possible way that David Lynch would not be involved in the comics, though.
Oh, if they were to make a Twin Peaks comic?
Yeah, he would be writing them or drawing them personally. I mean, he's a painter by trade. Yeah. That would be great, actually. That'd be positive. I think he kind of get devoted in the way Joe Hill is.
Mm-hmm.
Keanu Reeves.
Well, he's quoted on the Bang, yep. number 2.
There we go.
Yeah, he's tapped in.
Yeah, he's tapped in. Someone's going to exploit the Reevesance.
What would he even do? I guess a Matrix comic?
A line of spy comics.
There you go.
Yeah.
A lot of backflips.
Yeah. I like Keanu Reeves. I just think he's too busy to do a line in the way DC would want to exploit him to.
And he's not known for like writing or creating ideas
exactly.
necessarily.
That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that there's going to be at least one.
Tyra Banks, new fashion comic series.
Yeah. I think there will be at least one where the second person on the byline is actually the person writing it.
Right, right, right. Which we've seen before. My 2020 prediction is there will be an X-Men event for the summer, a la, you know, War of the Realms. And it will somehow bleed into Marvel Studios hyping the X-Men, mutants, whatever you want to call it.
My
getting
God.
A movie or getting into, maybe there's an appearance of Wolverine in a movie.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's not a mutant movie. Because, and here's my argument, Kevin Feige is now controlling everything.
Yeah.
So you can have that kind of synergy where the...
Oh my God. I'm already annoyed by people fighting about this online.
About what?
This is going to happen. And people are like, are going to be like, oh, they're ruining the X-Men with the MCU. Like, it's oh my God. You're totally right. This is your negative, right?
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all for an X-Men event, although, you know, we've said on the show multiple times, it kind of sucks when you have to buy 90 books to read an event.
Yeah.
Which is the downside of having an X-Men event, because I'm sure they are going to have every Spider-Man, X-Men, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And there's already so many X-Men books alone.
Right. And so Feige's already said the mutants are coming. So what better way to stoke the fire than to somehow connect an X-Men and summer comic event with the movies? We should totally not forget we did this and check in next June and see if these are true.
Well, someone send me a bi-carrier pigeon, a note at this time next year.
Oh, you're not doing smoke signal anymore?
No, I'm off that.
In our next segment, Top Books for Next Week, we talk about our number one most anticipated comic out next week on December 25th.
Available.
Yes, there is not that many single issues out next week since it is Christmas Day. But Marvel's coming out with 4 titles, and we both pick Marvel books.
Yes.
My most anticipated book is Spider-Ham by Zeb Wells and Will Robson. If you've seen any of Robson's artwork online, it is fabulous. Super cartoony fun. I can't wait. Zeb Wells coming back to Marvel after a brief hiatus there, a couple years, I'd say, is exciting as well. We already know he's going to be jumping on with Hellions soon, so it looks like he's going all in very soon. Spider-Ham is a miniseries, but I'll be reviewing it for AIPTComics.com, so check that out on Wednesday. Actually, Tuesday. The review goes up early. That's my most anticipated book. What's your most anticipated book?
My most anticipated book is Incoming, number one. Mostly because I don't know what it is. I know Al Ewing is attached to it. I know it's like a giant Marvel line-wide murder mystery. It's got some cosmic stuff going on. It's going to lead directly into their new event, Empire.
Yeah.
I'm stoked about it. I think they're taking a big swing putting this out on the 25th, but...
There are a lot of creators. This is sort of like Marvel Comics 1000. There are different creative teams every couple pages.
But kind of aligned in a way to bleed into an event. Okay.
It looks Al Ewing and Roberto Ramos and Edgar Delgado are doing... I got the comic in front of me, sorry.
Yeah,
are doing 4 chunks of story here, there, here.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of Chip Zdarsky, Greg Pak, Matthew Rosenberg, Hickman.
I like all
Teeny
these
Howard.
People.
Yeah, I mean,
not enough women,
this is their A team, man.
Yeah.
The only writer that's a woman is Teeny Howard, I think.
Womp womp.
Oh, no, Kelly Thompson does 2 stories.
Okay, cool.
And there are artists as well. Are Carlos Pacheco's on here too? Oh, yeah, that's a man. Sorry.
I'm looking forward to it.
Eve Ewing as well.
Oh, great. She has that Youth Against Olds book coming out.
Youth Against Olds?
Yeah, I don't know what it's called. It's a maxi series about kind of like a Civil War-esque thing where teenagers shouldn't be allowed to be superheroes.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I'm stoked that she's on that. I kind of expect that this incoming book is going to tie together all those things somehow.
Yeah, have like multiple storylines flesh out of it. Yeah, that's a cool way to start the year. In our next segment, judging by the cover, Junior, we pick our favorite cover art out next week. Again, it's tricky. There's not a lot of covers coming out next week. What is your favorite cover art? Just for the record,
yeah. I am never picking those horny as fuck Dynamite Betty Page books.
Yeah, yeah.
That shit's weird.
Or they're like, they're horny Deja Thoris or horny.
Yeah, I'm never picking that stuff, y'all. Sorry.
I mean, let's be honest. Craft-wise, some great art, but very exploitive.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We're not, no diss on the creators, or the artists. They're doing a fantastic job. What is your favorite cover art out next week?
My favorite cover art next week is Peter Porker, The Spectacular Spider-Ham, number one, with cover art by Wendell DeLitt. It has Peter Porker, Spider-Ham vaulting off of the top of Spider-Verse-esque Spidey's head. It's got these really strong yellows and blues. It's the exact same art style as Spider-Verse. Which I can sum up by saying, I like a Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's cute.
Nice homage. Looks like a straight from, like, a future Spider-Ham movie.
Yep.
My favorite ever card comes from Doctor Strange number one by Phil Noto. This has been out for quite a while. They've actually had this art, you know, for months and months. We've known about this cover coming. But it's the start of Mark Waid's new direction for the character, where he is back to being a surgeon. His hands have been healed. And he can now cut people open as a day job. Phil Noto has basically split this book in half. On one side is Doctor Strange, and behind him is his, you know, iconic window. He's doing a spell with his hand and throwing up the horns. And on the other side, he's holding up a scalpel. Behind him, though, is a circle, and the circle is being formed by his the symbol window and a light that would clearly be used over a body while he does surgery. And he's wearing scrubs on one side and his Doctor Strange outfit on the other. It's a cool way to show one man now, you know, living two kind of lives.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really psyched for this. Mark Waid has done an amazing job with Doctor Strange in 2019. And it's really cool to see, you know, he basically did a whole new Doctor Strange this year, where Doctor Strange was doing like making magical weapons and stuff and going out into outer space and fighting magical aliens. And now it's a whole nother direction, and I'm very excited for it. And actually, if you hold on, in 2 weeks we're going to be doing a recap show, and I talk a little bit about Doctor Strange.
Strange. Yeah, which leads us perfectly into our programming note. Mm-hmm. Happy holidays, y'all. We will not have an episode next week. We're both taking some much deserved vacation time.
It's our first gap in 52 episodes.
But the week after, the week of January 1st, we are going to have an extra long looking at the document that the three of us, our friend of the podcast, Nathan Simmons, will be on. Looking at the document the three of us have made, I'm anticipating a 3+ hour episode.
Wow.
Where we recap all of 2019, the best and worst trends. We have a bunch of categories, best costume, best villain, best romance, all sorts of stuff that we have nominated things for. We're going to decide a winner or loser on the air. And then David and I are also going to be picking our top single issues and creators of 2019. So I hope y'all look forward to that. We've been working on it really, really hard. And everything that has gone into it so far, I'm really excited about.
Yeah, that show will air on January 5th. So check that out. But before you wait till January 5th to listen to that show, listen now to an interview I did with Carmen Machado and Danny about the Lolo Woods. It's an exciting one, and we also do a little off-topic top shelf, pick some interesting horror movies you may have missed in 2019 as their favorite things that are not comics related. Thanks for listening, and see you in 2020, or listen to you in 2020.
See ya.
And with me is Carmen Maria Machado and Danny. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, thank you for having us.
I have to say, okay, so I've read it and I love it. I love this first issue. I love that there's like a scary jump kind of moment early on. I'm questioning like what's going on right at the start. There's really cool layered details in there that I'll get to in questions later. But first and foremost, can you tell us a little bit about how the creative team came together on this title?
Yeah, well, I mean, I had been asked, DC had reached out to me and asked if I wanted to do a comic, and I had pitched them the project. And then once we were all set, then they, you know, sent me a bunch of artists to consider. And I saw Danny's work and I was like, that's what I want.
Nice.
And because it was so lovely.
Nice.
That's great.
And, like, for me, they just told me that they have this project in development, and they told me it's a horror thing and it's Carmen's book. And I was like, yeah, of course. I mean.
I love your work, Danny. Your work on Coffin Bound is so good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
When I was reading the book, I instantly started thinking about other stories that we've seen of late of younger characters riding their bicycle and evil lurks. I mean, even the new Ghostbusters trailer or Stranger Things, they have this vibe where it's almost like Stand By Me, right? Like there's kids interacting with ghosts and monsters. Is that in right now? Like why are we seeing so many of these stories? Not that your story's like this, like just a retread by any means, but it's like a similar theme, like with Paper Girls too.
Oh, I don't know. I guess. Well, I mean, I think there's always an appetite for nostalgia.
Yeah,
and like what you just described is nostalgia. You know, it's like nostalgia. So, I mean, that's my guess, I suppose.
Right. Yeah. Capturing like the youth. Because you don't see kids riding like BMX bikes in the streets anymore, do we?
No. Well, no, not really. Well, sometimes. It depends where you are, I guess. But
in Greece, they do.
Oh, really? Oh, you're in Greece?
We're a bit far behind. Yeah.
When creating this story, did you learn anything when creating the series and this first issue?
Oh, I mean, I had to do a lot of research because I was actually technically writing about an era that I was not alive during, or I was alive, but I was not a teenager. I'm also writing about a place that I'm familiar with, but not, I didn't like grow up in a town exactly like that. I grew up in a larger place. So there was that. And also I was, you know, I'm basing the town of Shudder to Think and sort of the phenomenon of it, the town having been on fire for a long time is actually a fact about a town, a real town called Centralia in Pennsylvania. That's also been on fire for many decades. And so there's a, sorry, my brain. I'm a little sick. So my brain's kind of like in, I have cold medicine brain.
no worries.
But I actually wanted to look up like a lot of details about Centralia and like sort of the history of it. And, you know, and so there are a lot of details in the book that I pull from like various sources about that town. So I did do a bit of research to write it.
Nice.
Yeah, Carmen had she made a visual guide for me, like for the whole thing, which was really helpful, because if Carmen had to research things, imagine how things were for me on the other side of the world.
Yeah. Right.
And I was a kid in the 90s as well, so I wasn't a teen then. I didn't know how things were. So, yeah, this visual guide was really helpful.
That's interesting. Did the guide consist of like pictures and stuff?
Yeah, she did like such a good job with this.
Yeah,
because it was pictures. Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like I, you know, I had it so clearly in my head, but I am not an artist.
Yeah.
I did not draw this, thank goodness that Danny did it and not me. But yeah, so in my mind, like I could imagine exactly what I wanted, but I was like, oh, if someone's not from this area, it's like very hard to describe.
Mm-hmm.
So I just made like a very rudimentary, like I think it was a Word document that I put photos into, which shows you how technologically advanced I am. But I just like copied and pasted photos from the internet for like hours and hours and hours. Being like, here's what the town will look like. Here's what this place will look like. Here's what the character I'm imagining for the characters, you know?
Yeah.
I have to say, Danny, you did such a great job creating this like scary and interesting environment. Like I remember early on the porch, there's like trash, and just the way it's lit and the way it's drawn, it's almost unnerving. And I suppose it's from all that research, but also like, how do you capture sort of a haunting nature of the ordinary? Is there an approach you take?
Yeah, actually, the script was really inspiring. Mm. And everything that is behind the scenes that Carmen writes and describes that gets to me is stimuli. Is this a word? It's stimulant for me. Yeah, so, and I also got really inspired from Samuel Connolly, the artist who made he makes the covers. Mm-hmm. And he has a really specific aesthetic that I love his work. And he's really shadowy, like you, as if you're taking a picture with a flash picture at night in the woods. So I got really inspired from his work as well. And like for me with horror, it's what you kind of hide in the shadows and you don't show that much that makes it more atmospheric.
Right.
Like everything is the atmosphere. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the unknown or something.
Yeah. Like you have to leave something for the reader's mind so he can get into it more.
When the girls are in the theater in the opening scene, there's a shot of their heads made up of like a parrot and hands. That was wild. Was that fully detailed in the script, or how did that come about?
That was a tough one, actually, because it's like the way Carmen writes.
Yeah.
It's like words that shape things in your head, like in your mind. Uh-huh. But it's really tough to put it in an actual image.
Yeah.
So I wanted it to be a bit dreamy and like you can linger, like you can focus on many parts, but also like you get a general image of the confusion in this scene.
Right.
I don't know if I'm describing it properly.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Carmen, we need a director's cut with the full script then. I need to read that.
I know, right?
that was such a, like, it's like beautiful and unnerving. It's just so perfect. And I was like literally sitting there looking at this panel for way longer than I usually do. And I review like 12 comics a week. So, but then to the script's point though, like Carmen, I had to write this down. It's so, oh my God, like it had me shivering. Babies were born with placentas black as soot. Their mothers were birthing coal itself. That... My mind is like exploding at that.
Yeah, it's really gross, isn't it? Isn't it great?
I think one of the reasons, okay, I'm just going to say it. This is my favorite Hill House comic so far. One of the reasons why it was so striking to me, it's a great mix of visual horror, but like the prose, like I just read, just it gets to you. It kind of hits you at a different place than just the visual horror. You know what I mean? Is there a balance you have to strike between like this kind of language where it's like really kind of it creeps up on you and then it gets you and the visuals?
Well, I mean, I guess that's the thing about comics, right? I mean, so, and for me, that's like actually a way, you know, a thing I had to learn as I was working on this, and like everybody at DC has been so amazing and like trying to, including Joe Hill, who's like sort of, you know, giving me a lot of notes and edits, was like, you know, thinking visually, it more like you would, you know, think about it like a film script, for example. So like, I remember at some point Joe saying like, what if you move the perspective of this panel? Like right now we're just looking at them, but what if we're looking at them through like some leaves or something? So there's like an implied, like, you know, like there's somebody looking at them through, like there's, you know, there's a sense of like this sort of intermediary. And I was like, oh, that's super interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Or like they pointed out to me, like, you know, when you have a visual surprise, you want it on an even number page so that you flip the page and then the thing is there. And I was like, oh yeah, I never would have thought about that. Cause it's like that's not how you write prose. You know, you don't write prose quite in the same way. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, you know, obviously I'm bringing my prose to the table, which is like, I know it's great. I know I'm really good at it. Like it's what I do.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's also this like, yeah, the visual element obviously is like super important. And I feel like sort of with Danny's art and with sort of the guidance of everybody I'm working with at DC, like, I feel like I'm beginning to fully, like, obviously I appreciate it as a reader, but like as a writer, appreciating like the way that those things sort of marry together.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
you should definitely do it again. Definitely do it again.
Yeah. Do you have any script ideas that may be books but could also be turned into comics?
Well, it's funny because this actually was initially a book idea that then got turned into a comic. But I feel like I just now have my appetite wet for like collaborative work. And I actually have been thinking about like other projects, not just for comics, but like thinking about like visual, like movies and things like that. Like, because I feel like writing scripts and writing collaboratively has actually really has become like a thing that I've been really interested in the last like year as I've been working on this comic. So
nice. I have to ask, why was this story right? Why was it right for the comic book medium?
Well, you know, initially it actually, like I said, it was this book idea that I'd had based on a dream that I'd had a while back. And, but all I had written, like, you know, often when I get ideas, I write sort of paragraphs or I'll write a few pages and they'll be like prose. But actually all I had was like the sort of premise and I had the characters and I had the setting, like all kind of noted down. But I didn't have any like other material. Like I was just sort of like, oh, I feel like this is a world that I can imagine. And so when DC asked me to do a comic for them, I was like, oh, this actually I think would look really beautiful visually, would be like very upsetting, and just actually would like translate really well to a visual medium. And so yeah, so it just seemed natural. And then once I like wrote up the pitch, I was like, oh yeah, this like maybe this was always meant to be a comic, you know, which I didn't realize at first.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have to ask. Rob Reiner has directed Sea Dogs, which is obviously Sea Dogs is the backup in the Hill House comics. Can I ask you why Rob Reiner?
Oh, I think there was a conversation about who the director would be. And we went through like many different, you know, because like different people would mean different things.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember, I feel like I actually sort of didn't have I was sort of like, I can be whatever. Like, I don't really have a preference.
Yeah.
And I think it was Joe. Danny, do you remember, was it Joe that suggested Rob Reiner? Somebody suggested Rob Reiner. And it felt,
Yeah, and it felt right.
We were like, sure, that sounds great.
I immediately, when I saw his name on the marquee in the early scene in the first issue there, I thought, does that mean Sea Dogs is like a sequel to The Princess Bride?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know. I don't know how it works in this universe. I'm not sure.
When we had Joe Hill on the show, I think about 7 weeks ago now, I asked him about the multiverse of not only his story, these stories, but also like with Stephen King's stories, because I think the Shawshank Prison shows up in his book, Basketful of Heads. And so now we have Sea Dogs, which is appearing as a movie, but also it's the backup. Are you thinking at all about the multiverse of the Hill House comics and how it may connect to other titles?
Certainly. And I can tell you without spoiling anything that there are going to be a couple other connections.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, so it is something that like, I think of it in a more sort of, I guess coming from like my background, like more like sort of metafictional playful space. But yes, certainly I think it is sort of a kind of multiverse and, I guess we'll have to see. You'll have to see. I've seen it. I know what's coming, but you'll have to see.
I want to see someone cut out pages from all the books and then put it up on a wall and then put like red string between them and be like,
right, exactly.
I've cracked it.
Exactly.
When it comes to character creation, where do you start? V and Eldora are like so real. They feel, I don't know, like I instantly just gravitate towards them being people that live down the street from me, even though I live in Boston and not Pennsylvania. But yeah, how do you go about creating characters that feel whole and real?
Oh, I mean, that's a really good question. Yeah. I guess you think of them as real in a way. I mean, not in a like they speak to me kind of way. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, there's bits of me in there, bits of people I've known, people I wish I knew, friends, you know, thinking a lot about what it meant to be a teenager, you know, what those friendships were like, other sort of characters that I've read that I've really loved, like relationships on the page that I've really loved. So yeah, I don't know. How do you create a character? That's a really great question. It's like kind of weirdly hard to answer. You just sort of do.
Yeah.
You know, you move them across the page until they sort of come out to you.
Yeah, and it's like you get to know them.
Yeah.
In the process, because even like I've noticed, the more I draw like some specific characters in this situation, V and L, they like I get to know what expressions they will have and what are their gestures and how like they will stand or how they will smile. And it's like getting to know people, and it's nice.
Danny, is there a process where you're like sketching them out and trying to figure out how they look, or was that quite quick?
It depends. Like on some characters, like building them and creating them in my head, it's a bit more confusing and more difficult. For some, it just comes out naturally, and I guess. Yeah, no, I don't know.
Sure, it's probably very organic, especially like in the early stages.
Yeah, and like the more you, like for me, the more I draw someone, like a character, the more, as I said before, the more I get to know them and I know how they will act and what they will do and what, how they will be with each other in the page.
Mm-hmm.
So,
A large part of the identity of the book, I feel, comes from the color, the use of color by Tamara Bonvillain. What goes into choosing like the color palette for the series? Do you guys chime in with that sort of approach? Because I know there's like purples and there's oranges.
I don't know. I think she just sort of does it. And I'm like amazed. I'm amazed. She does it and I'm amazed.
Yeah, and she's amazing. Like I actually really wanted to work on this book with her because I had done a couple of covers with her and I'd never worked with her before. And I was really happy with her choices and I really knew that she would rock this.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's doing an amazing job and the outcome is really good.
It's so easy to forget color has a lot to do with like volume in the book and giving it texture and perspective.
Yeah, and especially on my designs because it's a bit like flat and black. Mm-hmm. So coloring is a really big part.
Nice. Mm. Yeah, it's just such a beautiful book.
Mm.
I'm always curious, were there other working titles for this before you landed on The Low Woods?
No, that was the title that I started with.
Nice. I love the structure of it. The low, comma, low woods. It's got its own drama to it.
Well, it was actually I was listening to some true crime podcast and there was a crime and I wish I could somewhere I have it written down. There was like an episode that I listened to where they at some point somebody says that like a boy's body was found. I think it might have been in the low forest or something. Ooh, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very like struck by the way that felt. And I misremembered it as low woods, but I had written the phrase down. And then at some point I looked it up again and it wasn't low woods, but I was like, oh, that's going to be the title that I use. So yeah, it hit my ear right. And it just became like what I wanted to do.
Yeah. There's like some kind of magic with titles, isn't it? I mean, they could be the greatest work ever, but if the title doesn't capture some like kind of whimsy or magic, you're just like, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you guys have a Mount Rushmore of creators you'd like to work with in the comics medium?
A Mount Rushmore?
It doesn't have to be four. You could be your own personal Rushmore with 25 different heads.
Oh my God. I don't even know. I mean, there are so many people that I admire and so many comics and graphic novels that I really love. I can say that right now I'm very obsessed with Jillian Tamaki. So I feel like, I don't know what that means in terms of like my Mount Rushmore, but I've been very interested in her work recently. I also am very obsessed with Junji Ito, which I know like he does all of his own stuff, but I'm like very, very obsessed with his whole situation. So
right.
I feel like everyone is obsessed with him.
Yeah, I mean he's so good.
Yeah.
Danny, do you have any Mount Rushmore creators you'd like to work with?
Oh, so many. I don't know.
To pitch so that they'll find you and give you scripts.
Yeah, it's my time now. No, I really like working with friends actually, and so it's nice to have this connection first, and then you're like, okay, let's do something together, and that's how Coffin Bound was born. But it's also nice to make friends in the process. Like, so I don't know with who I would like to work. I can't tell, there's so many.
That's okay.
Yeah.
When Joe Hill was on, I had asked him to give us a three-word description of each title in the line of books. And of course, he immediately broke that rule and started giving us two or three sentences. But for The Lolo Woods, he described your book as the perfect mix of Davids. Pause. And I was like, what does that mean? And he said 50% David Cronenberg and 50% David Lynch.
Ooh.
High praise. High praise.
Man,
would you agree with that?
Yeah, man, I need him to pitch everything for me. That's amazing. I'm going to steal that. That's great.
It was actually step further. He said, it's like if Twin Peaks was the setting for a David Cronenberg film.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much.
It really captured a sense of like imagination in myself and my co-host, in particular because we love these directors, but also because like that idea of like a unnerving setting, but with, I assume, gory graphic violence. Uh-huh. Is that something we might see in the series?
Series. That's it. That's what it is.
That's awesome. Do you guys have any personal heroes in the creative arts?
Like writers that I admire?
Really any art. It could be visual art. It could be movies. Oh. It could be authors. Sure.
Yeah. Danny, do you, sorry, I feel like I've been talking a lot. Do you have any that you want to talk about?
Well, I have many artists that I really admire in comics. Like Eduardo Risso is really great for me. I really love his work. And also some Europeans, like Sergio Toppi. His work has inspired me a lot. Mm-hmm. But also, I don't know all the artists in these books, but I grew up with reading old Italian, like from the 70s and 80s, porn horror comics.
Nice.
They are great, but they're like so many artists, and it's I really liked because it was black and white and just heavy inks. Mm-hmm. And this is where it all started, I think, with me. But yeah. Other than that, like, I really like Tarantino movies and all the world he's building, and Lynch movies. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
For me, I feel like the writers who really, really got under my skin are Shirley Jackson, Kelly Link, Angela Carter, Helen Oyeyemi. Junji Ito was somebody who was very important to me when I was in my MFA. And then I also really, really love, I'm also a David Lynch fan, and Karen Kusama, who's this director that I really adore, who's done some like truly excellent horror. So yeah, I feel like I'm just so interested in horror, especially horror and like all speculative fiction. Like, I feel like there's just so many exciting, like, especially women like working in those fields. Yeah. And they're people that have really spoken to me as an artist.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Do either of you have a favorite moment or issue in The Lolo Woods so far?
Oh,
wait, I do, but I can't say.
You could tell us what issue it occurs in.
Some splash pages. Uh-huh. They are really, really good.
Yeah.
My favorite moments, but I don't think I can talk about this now.
Yeah.
I love you'll see. Sorry, we'll see. Yeah, we will see. How long is this series?
Six issues.
I loved that deer monster thing in the first issue. My God, it caught me by surprise.
Yeah.
I think what's amazing is, you know, especially American readers, we read from like left to right, right? So I saw the deer's like back end, and then I slowly moved over to the front, and I'm like, wait a minute.
What's happening here?
Make it go away.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for the interview portion of the show. In our last segment, which how we end every episode, is Off Topic Top Shelf, where we talk a little bit about things that we're into right now that are not comics related. It's a way for us to give our listeners a reprieve from all the comics talk for over an hour. Would you guys like to share anything that you're really into right now? It could be anything, books, movies.
Oh God, it's funny because I feel like now it's the end of the year. I've been like asking everybody I know, like, what movies have you seen this year that you've loved? And for me, the two that have really like made my brain super happy. There are three. Is Parasite, Border, and also Midsommar. All of which just made me very, very happy this year.
I need to see Parasite.
Parasite was really good.
Parasite's amazing. Yeah.
It's really good.
Is that your pick, Danny?
Yeah, Parasite for sure. And I'm reading right now Sapiens. It's a book from, I'm going to kill that name for sure with my Greek accent, Yuval Noah Harari. I think, which is, it's a really interesting book about, it's the brief history of man, of human, which is really, it's really interesting.
Interesting.
So I'm into that right now. I have to finish it. What else? I can't think of anything else right now.
That's enough to put on everybody's holiday wish list, I suppose.
Yeah, but Sapiens is a really good book. And Parasite was really good. Yeah.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Well, Carmen, Danny, thank you so much for being on the Comics Podcast. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah.